Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome to Fort McMurray Matters.
Keeping you connected to our community.
Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.
Welcome to another edition of Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Steph Seidel. Today we're going to be hearing from Selena McIsaac with the Fort McMurray SPCA about how this past year has gone with the pandemic and adopting pets. First, we're going to hear from Premier Jason Kenney from his press conference yesterday afternoon, where he congratulated President Joe Biden, but also had a few words for him about the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline.
On behalf of Alberta's government, I'd like to begin by congratulating President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris on their inauguration today. Following recent events, it was reassuring to see a orderly transition of power of the government of the United States today, respecting the democratic decisions of the American people, the rule of law, and the Constitution of the United States. The world needs a strong American democracy, and today we saw the strength of the institutions that protect American democracy. The United States, of course, is our most important ally and trading partner. And amongst all of the Canadian provinces, Alberta has the deepest economic ties to the United States and strong social connections that go back well over a century. I wish the new administration and the people of the United States every success in the coming years. With over $100 billion worth of exports to the United States every year, Alberta has a broad range of important issues to work on to create prosperity for people on both sides of the border. But as friends and allies of the United States, we are deeply disturbed that one of President Biden's first actions in office has been to rescind the presidential permit for the Keystone XL pipeline border crossing. This is a gut punch for the Canadian and Alberta economies. Sadly, it is an insult directed at the United States' most important ally and trading partner on day one of a new administration. Today, as I speak, over 2,000 women and men have lost their jobs or heading home from good-paying union jobs as a result of this decision. My thoughts go to every one of them as they cope with the distressing consequences of today's decision. We'll continue to fight for them and for the 59,000 jobs that this project would create. Let's be clear about what happened today. The leader of our closest ally retroactively vetoed approval for a pipeline that already exists and which is co-owned by a Canadian government, directly attacking by far the largest part of the Canada-U.S. trade relationship, which is our energy industry and exports. The portion of Keystone XL that crosses the Canada-U.S. border between Montana and Saskatchewan was installed last summer. It was built following a decade of rigorous environmental analysis and approval. Thousands of union workers are being fired as we speak as a result of the decision. This decision was made without even giving Canada the opportunity respectfully to make the case for how Keystone XL would strengthen U.S. national and energy security, how it would bolster both economies, and how our two countries could find a path together on a climate and environmental policy. For months, we've been told that the Biden transition team would not communicate with foreign governments on this or other issues. And now a decision has been made without even giving us a chance to communicate formally with the new administration. That's not good faith. In my books, that's not how you treat a friend and an ally. For a friend and an ally, you show respect for your friends and by listening to them and giving them a chance to find common ground. The entire point of this project of Keystone XL is to strengthen the historic Canada-U.S. relationship, building the modern infrastructure for safe, secure future exports of energy to the United States. With that, we could help our friends become less dependent on foreign oil imports, including from hostile OPEC dictatorships, some of which are openly hostile to the United States, and none of which share Canada's commitment to high environmental standards, to global stability, and to human rights. We're being told that this decision was made over concerns about climate policy, but the U.S. State Department's exhaustive analysis that was conducted under President Obama's administration concluded that Keystone XL would actually reduce CO2 emissions, as the alternative will be to move this energy by higher emitting and less secure rail transport. The Canadian oil sands have reduced the carbon intensity of the average barrel of bitumen by about 30% and are on track for even larger reductions. Our oil sands production, our oil sands producers rank at the top of the world in global assessments of environmental, social, and governance standards. Most of these companies have committed to net zero emissions in their operations. The Government of Canada has more ambitious emissions reduction targets than the new U.S. administration, and our provincial government here is investing billions of dollars in the development of emissions reductions technology to further make progress on this important front. In other words, Canada is part of the solution to the energy transition. But today's decision was made without giving Canada the chance to make that case. And one of the things I find so concerning about this. Let me also point out that TC Energy has made tremendous progress in bringing on board First Nations on both sides of the border as potential equity partners, that this project has had enthusiastic support of major U.S. unions, including several that were active supporters of President Biden's campaign. It has the support of all state governments along the pipeline route, and in a large poll recently sponsored by Alberta's government, it indicates 71% of American voters, including a majority of Democrat Party voters, support construction of the Keystone XL project, and that number only goes up when people find out that construction is underway and the border crossing is in place.
Once again, that was Premier Jason Kenney from his press conference yesterday afternoon, speaking about the executive order President Joe Biden made on his first day in office, canceling the Keystone XL pipeline permit. We're going to take our first break here on Fort McMurray Matters, but when we come back, we're going to be hearing more from Premier Jason Kenney.
We'll return in a moment to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7. We're back to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Steph Seidel. If you're just tuning in, we are tuning in to the press conference that Premier Jason Kenney held yesterday afternoon, addressing the new President of the United States, President Joe Biden, on his executive order released yesterday afternoon, where he rescinded the Keystone XL pipeline's permit.
And so I call upon Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his government to ask the new administration to sit down and to discuss this decision in the context of a way forward between Canada and the United States on environmental policy, climate policy, and energy security. Surely that is the least that our closest friend and ally owes Canada, which is to respectfully discuss this and review the decision in light of all of these and other facts. If, however, the U.S. government refuses to open the door to a constructive and respectful dialogue about these issues, then it is clear that the government of Canada must impose meaningful trade and economic sanctions in response to defend our country's vital economic interests. Not doing so would be to create a dangerous precedent. And let me be blunt. I believe it was the failure of this federal government to respond with strength to the veto of Keystone XL in 2015, which in part led to today's impasse. I believe that the transition team, the now administration, concluded from the lack of a meaningful response to the 2015 veto that this federal government doesn't really intend to stand up for this country's largest industry. I hope that's not true. I appreciate Prime Minister Trudeau's recent words, expressions of support for this project. But that support is only meaningful if it is followed by action which defends hundreds of thousands of Canadian workers in our country's largest industry, our largest export industry, that is our energy industry. As I say, a failure to act, a failure to respond in a meaningful and direct way will create a dangerous precedent. By far, Canada's largest export to the United States is our energy products, most of which are produced here in Alberta, a value of over $90 billion a year. That's twice the size of auto trade between Canada and the United States. It dwarfs by comparison the aviation sector in Quebec, the aquaculture, fisheries industry trade out of Atlantic Canada, the lumber industry trade out of British Columbia. The largest element of our trading relationship is this energy. And the same political forces that succeeded today in obtaining this retroactive veto are seeking now to kill other critical pipelines that safely deliver Canadian energy to fuel the U.S. economy, including the recent effort by the governor and attorney general of Michigan to decommission the Enbridge Line 5 project, which has safely operated for 60 years. If they succeed in doing so, or if they persuade this administration to apply this precedent of retroactively rescinding presidential permits for pipeline border crossings, that would have a devastating impact not only on the energy workers of Western Canada, but on the manufacturing workers and just ordinary families in Southern Ontario who depend on that as their main source of energy. Similar, the senior climate policy advisor to now President Biden has openly expressed her opposition to the Line 3 replacement project. And so if there is not a strong and meaningful response to today's decision, I believe that those organizations will move, their next target will be the use of a presidential veto on other pipelines, which would be devastating to the largest industry of Canada's economy, which employs hundreds of thousands of workers. Now, today, I was very disappointed to see Foreign Minister Garneau say that we should, quote, understand and respect this decision, to see Ambassador Hillman in Washington say that we should, quote, accept it and move forward, and for the Prime Minister merely to say that he was disappointed. Now, let me compare this to the quite appropriate and strong response of Canada's government to efforts by the last president to undermine Canada's vital economic interests. You'll recall that former President Trump campaigned on ripping up NAFTA. But the Canadian government did not accept that and move forward. They did not understand and respect that decision. They fought it. They fought it quite rightly and strongly for 2 years to negotiate a sound new North American trade agreement. President Trump campaigned on imposing steel tariffs and aluminum tariffs on foreign imports to the United States. That was his campaign commitment. The position of the Trudeau government wasn't to accept that and move forward. It was not to understand that position of tariffs and to respect the decision, as they've said today. It was to fight it. In fact, allow me to, I recall that that former Minister of Trade, Chrystia Freeland, had very sharp words for the U.S. government, as did the Prime Minister Then Foreign Minister Freeland said, quotes, "The United States has taken the absurd decision to harm its own people at a time when its economy is suffering its deepest crisis since the Great Depression. Any American who buys a car or a bike will suffer." And she went on to say this was unnecessary, unwarranted, and entirely unacceptable, and that a trade dispute is the last thing anyone needs, but Canada will respond with strength, as it did with countervailing tariffs that got the attention of the American government and caused the policy to be reversed. Surely, hundreds of thousands of energy workers deserve at least as strong a defense from their national government as that government gave to Canadian steel workers in central Canada and elsewhere. So that is what I'm calling on the Trudeau government to do, which is to seek to enter into a respectful dialogue about energy and the environment and how this safe job-creating project can operate in that context, and failing that, to demonstrate that Canada will stand up for itself against this uncalled-for attack against our country's vital economic interests.
Once again, that was Premier Jason Kenney addressing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as well as the brand new U.S. President Joe Biden on the Keystone XL pipeline and the rescinded permit. We're going to take our last break here on Fort McMurray Matters, but when we come back, we're going to be hearing from Executive Director of the Fort McMurray SPCA, Selena McIsaac, and how things are going at the shelter with their pets and the pandemic.
We'll return in a moment to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7. Today, we're back to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. I'm Steph Seidel. We're about to tune into an interview our news director, Jaron Vecchio, is having with Selena McIsaac, the executive director of the Fort McMurray SPCA.
So, Selena, first off, I appreciate you taking a couple minutes. And I've been seeing, countless stories throughout the pandemic of SPCAs, humane societies across the country have been seeing, you know, adoption levels rise as people have been, forced to stay inside a lot more, limit themselves from meeting people. So a lot of them have decided maybe let's find, that forever companion, get them their forever home. So I'm curious as to what kind of numbers have you guys been seeing over the past 10 months?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we've also been seeing those stats across the country and have been following those closely. So for us, we tend to see high adoption rates on a regular basis and have not, as far as dog adoptions go, seen a huge increase in the number of dog adoptions. But where we're seeing the increase is our days in shelter. So we measure that each year. And in 2019, we were seeing an average stay of around 30 days in shelter. And for 2020, we're now down to seeing an average stay of 24. But if I'm being speaking candidly, the majority of our younger animals are in and out of the shelter in less than 2 weeks, less than 14 days. So we have seen an increase in our days in shelter, or a decrease in our days in shelter. But with the dog population, we haven't seen a huge increase in the number of adoptable dogs. Now, there's many factors that play into that. But that being said, our cat adoptions during the pandemic, we have seen a 31% increase in cat adoptions. Wow. So a huge increase for our cats, as well as their days in shelter, way, way down as well.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the main reason as to why maybe cats are getting adopted at a higher level right now during the pandemic? Is it mostly, would you believe that a lot of the measures that have been put in place maybe playing a part in that, as many people have to stay at home? We also know that cats are, less maintenance than dogs as well. What are the reasoning, do you think?
I think those are great reasons that you mentioned there. People working from home and are at home now thinking now might be a great time to add a new family member. And as well as cats tend to be a little bit more of an independent pet. So I would assume that both of those reasons are why.
Mm-hmm. I always like the joke how a dog needs your attention every second of the day, where you could be gone for 2 years and the cat will see you and be like, "Oh, hey, how's it going? I haven't seen you in a while."
That's right. I think we've actually talked about that before.
Yeah. And I'm a big cat person, so I love to see that more cats are finding their forever home. I'm curious, there have been a lot of concerns about maybe people adopting animals during this time and then realizing, oh, wait, maybe this isn't the best time for me. And then I expect that maybe you guys have been seeing some higher surrenders, or are those numbers still low?
We actually haven't seen, that was our surrender rate, but not in our returns. So that's the number that we've been really trying to focus on, is those returns, animals that were adopted out during the pandemic and that have been brought back. And we've actually seen a 5% decrease in animal returns in 2020 as opposed to 2019.
Wow, that's fantastic. Are you a little surprised by that at all?
When the pandemic began, we all had our reservations about the number of individuals that were coming and looking for adding a new family member, because of course we wanted to make sure we were always relaying this is a long-term commitment, looking at anywhere from a 10 to 20 year commitment when you're taking on an animal, depending on the age of the animal that you adopt out. Though I don't want to say we were surprised, because we were always hopeful that that wouldn't be the case, we are pleasantly surprised, I guess, to see that has not been the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I let you go, we know that there are still a lot of animals at the SPCA who deserve their forever home, and we'd love to get them adopted as soon as possible. So if anyone's listening and they want to, you know, set up an appointment to maybe meet some of the dogs and cats that you guys have and maybe hopefully find that match, how can they do so?
So at this time, following AHS regulations, we are still open on a managed reduced capacity basis. So if people were interested in coming up and seeing the animals at the shelter, I would just ask that they show patience and understanding with the guidelines that are put in place might have extended some of their wait times for being able to get into the shelter. And they can come on up to the shelter, or animals are able to be viewed on our website at fmspca.ca.
All right. Well, Selena, is there anything else you'd like to add? Maybe we didn't have a chance to chat about.
I think I'm okay.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you doing this interview, and thanks so much for getting back to me so quickly.
Thanks, Jaron.
Once again, that was our news director, Jaron Vecchio, speaking with Selena McIsaac, the executive director of the Fort McMurray SPCA. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today here on Fort McMurray Matters, but make sure you tune in every weekday at noon for a fresh episode. If you missed something or you want to hear more, you can always check out our podcast at mix1037fm.com. I'm Steph Seidel, and this has been Fort McMurray Matters.
That's the end of another edition of Fort McMurray Matters.
Want a copy of this episode or any past episode? Download the podcast at mix1037fm.com.
Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.